Viva Frelimo!
Viva!
Viva Frelimo!
Viva!
Frelimo, aí na muixo!
Aí na muixo, Frelimo, aí na muixo!
Frelimo, aí na muixo!
Aí na muixo, Frelimo, aí na muixo!
Viva Frelimo, the story of the national liberation struggle in Mozambique, the story of a victory, and of the men and women who made it possible.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Part 7, The Zimbabwe Connection. On the 7th of September 1971, the illegal regime of Ian Smith in Rhodesia reported for the first time in an official communique that its troops had clashed with Frelimo. According to the Rhodesians, the fighting had taken place inside Rhodesia a few days earlier, and 7 Frelimo guerrillas had been killed. Some years later, however, the grim truth came out in a report entitled Terror in Tet, written by 2 Spanish Burgos priests, Father Alfonso Valverde and Father Martin Hernandez. These priests spoke of bloodshed inside Mozambique, not Rhodesia, and their report makes chilling reading. It says, in part, "In the village of Deveteve, the Rhodesian soldiers killed David, the son of George. It was evening and he was going out to bring in the cows. As he went along the path, he was shot dead. The soldiers took him to a nearby hillock and left him there after cutting off his hands and feet. David was one of our best Christians and was married with 4 children." That was on the 3rd of September. On the 5th, said the priests, a squad of Rhodesian soldiers arrived at Singa village in Mukumbura district. They arrested Chief Singa's 3 eldest sons and sent the chief to find the rest of the family, who were hiding. They were shot by another Rhodesian squad as they returned after dark. "Only 2 children managed to escape death," said the priests. The following died instantly: Chief Singa, his 10-year-old son Adamu, his daughter Ronica, recently married and pregnant, his 3 daughters-in-law, Matigwiri, Rotina and Esther, also 2 babies who were being carried on their mothers' backs. Another priest, Father Luis Afonso da Costa, corroborated their report, adding the names of 9 more people, 3 of them boys of 12, who were killed by the Rhodesian troops. These reports of atrocities against civilians refer to the days immediately preceding the Rhodesian communique, a communique which talked only of the killing of what the Rhodesians described as Frelimo terrorists, a communique which talked only of action inside Rhodesia. In fact, as the priest's report shows, the action was in the Mozambican province of Tet, and the victims were unarmed peasants. Ian Smith denied that his men were fighting inside Mozambique, and continued to deny this for more than a year later. In fact, however, Rhodesian troops had been in Tet province since 1969, intervening on the side of the Portuguese army to try to stop the advance of the Mozambican liberation struggle. In this, they would fail, as they would ultimately fail to stop the struggle inside Zimbabwe itself. Intervention in the province of Tet in Mozambique in 1969 was a response to the opening of a war front in that province by Frelimo in the previous year. Smith and his military advisers could see the strategic importance of this new front. Until then, the war in Mozambique had been taking place far from the borders of Rhodesia. But when Frelimo began launching military operations in Tet in 1968, it was closing in not only on key Portuguese positions in Mozambique, but also on areas bordering on Rhodesia. Smith could see that if Frelimo managed to continue its southward thrust, it wouldn't be long before his sanctions-busting links through Mozambique to the port of Beira would be threatened. The Rhodesians had a poor opinion of the ability of the Portuguese armed forces, and a very high opinion of their own abilities, so they moved in to help the Portuguese. The main concern for the Portuguese and the Rhodesians was to prevent Frelimo from crossing the river Zambezi. The river runs through the middle of Tete province, and as long as Frelimo could be contained north of the Zambezi, they would be well away from the Rhodesian border and the Smith regime's lifeline to the port of Beira. But in 1970, despite all the efforts of the Portuguese and Rhodesian forces, Frelimo did cross the river and began its military operations in this new zone late in that year. The Rhodesians and the Portuguese knew that one of the main reasons for the Frelimo advance was that the population of the area were helping the guerrillas with food and logistical support. So in this period, and especially in the Rhodesia-Mozambique border areas, there was a big increase in atrocities against civilians carried out by the Portuguese and Rhodesian armed forces. Atrocities of the type mentioned at the beginning of this program. The most infamous massacre in Tete province in that period was carried out by the Portuguese armed forces at a place called Wiriamu. Again, the first reports of the massacre were sent out by priests in the area, and they estimated that more than 400 villagers had been slaughtered. The massacre of Wiriamu took place on December the 16th, 1972. The Portuguese colonialists and their Rhodesian allies may have felt pleased with themselves, but their satisfaction was short-lived. 5 days later, across the border in Rhodesia, guerrillas of the ZANU movement launched the first attack in a new and decisive phase of the Zimbabwe Liberation War. The Liberation War had been virtually paralyzed for several years. There were a number of reasons for this, but that's another story. In the early 1970s, some of the problems that had held up the struggle were beginning to be solved, and Ian Smith, by sending his soldiers on the rampage through Mozambique, provided the catalyst that was needed to get the Zimbabwe armed struggle underway again. Smith was looking for a war, and he got one. Frelimo allowed ZANU guerrillas to transport weapons and other supplies from Zambia through Frelimo-controlled zones of Tete province in Mozambique and into Zimbabwe, or Rhodesia as it was then called. On December the 21st, 1972, these guerrillas launched their first attack at Altena Farm in northeast Zimbabwe. It was the beginning of the end for Smith. 7 years to the day later, the Lancaster House Agreement, which led to Zimbabwean independence, was signed in London. In the second half of 1972, however, neither the Portuguese colonialists nor the Rhodesian settler regime were thinking ahead to their inevitable defeat. Incredible though it seems today, they actually thought, like the present South African minority regime, that they could go on forever, ruling the African people against their will. For the Portuguese in particular, it should have been obvious what was happening. They had virtually given up the provinces of Cabo Delgado and Niassa in the northeast. Tet province in the west, bordering on Zambia and Zimbabwe, was in turmoil. Then, in July 1972, Frelimo carried the armed struggle further south to the vast central zone of Mozambique, Manica and Sofala. And this was the crunch. This was where the road and the railway that linked Rhodesia with the bearer port stretched across the narrow neck of Mozambique. If Frelimo could begin disrupting traffic on that railway and that road, the Smith regime in Rhodesia would be in dire straits. When Smith found out that Frelimo was approaching his lines of communication to the Indian Ocean, he was furious. Only 3 months after Frelimo opened up the Manica and Sofala front, Ian Smith personally travelled to Lisbon to tell the Portuguese Prime Minister, Marcelo Caetano, what he thought about the Portuguese war effort. The conversation is not recorded, but one can imagine how angry Ian Smith must have been. He'd even provided troops to shore up the Portuguese war machine in Mozambique, but still Frelimo was marching on to the south, seemingly unstoppable. And it was not only Ian Smith who was getting worried. When Smith got back to Salisbury after his talks in Lisbon, it was only a few days before his military chiefs were meeting with the South African Defence Minister and Chief of Staff. The situation was desperate. In June 1973, Ian Smith publicly criticised the Portuguese, saying his own security problems would not be solved until guerrilla bases in Mozambique had been cleared out. In reply to this, the Portuguese commander-in-chief in Mozambique, General Causa de Arriaga, defended his performance as best he could. Whenever bases were found, he insisted, they were destroyed instantly. The problem was, he went on, that the guerrillas changed their bases every 24 hours or so. A problem indeed, and one to which General Causa had no answer. On New Year's Eve 1973-1974, the moment Smith and Causa had dreaded actually arrived. Frelimo freedom fighters blew up the Beira to Umtali railway at a spot just a few kilometres from the Rhodesian border. That was the end of the safe passage through Mozambique for sanctions-busting goods to and from Ian Smith's Rhodesia. Important sections of the Portuguese armed forces now knew that Frelimo was unstoppable. These Portuguese officers refused to be pushed on to inevitable military defeat by their fascist government. In April 1974, they overthrew that government in Lisbon, and a little over a year later, the People's Republic of Mozambique was born. Ian Smith's Rhodesia had one very big, hostile state on its doorstep.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Frelimo, aina mwisho.
Aina mwisho, Frelimo, aina mwisho.
You've been listening to a chapter in the story of the liberation struggle in Mozambique. This 9-part series was produced at the studios of Radio Mozambique in Maputo, and you can hear the next installment of Viva Frelimo at the same time next week.